Welcome, everybody, to the Competition Archery Media Podcast, where we explore all things pertaining to competition archery. I'm your host, PJ Riley, and with us today, we have a great guest, the brand new president of Hoyt Archery. We got Zach Kurtzall. Zach, thanks for being here with us.
Yeah, glad to be here. Thanks for having me, PJ.
So, Zach, we're about how many days into you as being president? Like a week or so?
Well, I mean, the announcement came out, I believe, last Tuesday, but yes. my official start date is a week from today. So,
oh, okay.
This is Randy's cleaning up his office and getting to the place where he's going to hand off the torch to me this Friday. So,
gotcha.
Well, next Monday, I guess Friday is Randy's last day in the office. So,
all right. Well, let's start from the beginning, Zach, because we just met a couple minutes ago, but give us a rundown. How old are you? What's your background? Let's get the Zach backstory.
Yeah, I'm 46. I've been with Hoyt for about 18 years. I hired on as a product engineer. That was 2003, and did everything from manage the value stream on accessory side to, you know, design and development within the product team for all things compound. I don't remember the dates as they happened throughout the years, but as I moved into management, first thing was I became the product engineering manager. I think that was about 12 years ago. So that would have put us around 09 or 10. And from there, I became the director of engineering with picked up some responsibility on the manufacturing engineering side. So I had product and manufacturing engineering, and then got moved into a vice president role. It was a funny story. When they gave me the vice president title, I asked them, so what is the extra responsibility that comes with that? And Randy's reply was, well, we'll get to that later. We don't need to talk about that today. So from there, I was given oversight of the manufacturing team as well. So at that point, I was the vice president of engineering and manufacturing, and then saw a title change earlier this year to operations, VP of operations. So that's kind of my background at Hoyt. I never shot a bow until I was 21 years old. And so there's a good story there. I met my wife, and we were in college, and her dad owned an archery shop in Northern California. And I may have shot a bow once or twice and, you know, in some camp somewhere, but nothing substantial. So, they invited me up to their cabin for opening weekend of deer season. And I went up there, and truth be told, I just got bored because I was the only one hanging around. And, so I picked up somebody's bow and started shooting it. And man, it was like, you know what they say, the flight of the arrow, people fall in love with it. I don't know if it was the flight of the arrow or just the actual shooting of the bow, but yeah, the rest is history, as I say. That was probably 25 years ago.
And so, and since then, as you mentioned, you got into target archery, you got into bow hunting. Did you get into those things after you came to Hoyt, or had you started that before?
Yeah, I had started it before. I got pretty involved pretty quick. I fell in love with it, and you know, every spare moment turned into shooting my target bow or getting ready for hunting season. So I hunted a little bit, I had hunted for about 5 years, four years before I came to Hoyt, and target archery about the same. So I was shooting, you know, shooting the Redding stuff. Northern California has a pretty great target circuit.
Yeah.
It's not an official circuit, but there's just a great tournament every weekend that's very similar to like the Redding style shoots. So I was doing that, and I was just, you know, I was going through my education, and I was in manufacturing engineering, and I thought, man, this might be pretty cool if I could go get a job in the archery industry. And
so that did come in early on, like,
oh yeah,
going to work for a place like that. Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, I was pretty lucky because having my father-in-law at the time, he was just my girlfriend's dad, but having him be in the industry, he went to the trade show every year and he invited me to go. And that was kind of when I figured it all out. And I, met the right people at Hoyt then. And then I just tried to stay in contact with them until I was done with school.
Yeah. So you go in as an engineer. I mean, what's that like? I don't know the engineering, the schooling part of that, but is it completely different when you start working on archery stuff from what you learned through college, or is it all basically the same?
Well, I mean, the fundamental design and engineering criteria, or the ideas behind engineering are unchanged because they're all based on physics and math. But when you get into wherever you go to work, whether it's archery or power plants, I mean, you're going to learn specifics or the things that you need to focus on to make successful in that job. I mean, my focus in college was plastics. That's where I've made my interest. And so I quickly became like, oh, well, he knows about the plastic stuff. Let's talk to him about, what should we do with this design? And it just kind of gave us a leg up. It was something that the team didn't have at the time. So, I think you just fit into the niche it's like any job. You come out of college and you've been trained for something specific, and the job may or may not fit that exact specificity, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. So let's give people an idea of what it means to be the president of Hoyt. What all encompasses Hoyt?
What all encompasses Hoyt, I guess, is 90 years of history. There's a pretty big tradition to uphold there. There's the quality and the expectations of the brand. So it's not just the product, but it's the brand. I have to be a steward of that. I have to make sure that, I put the team in place to be successful within those spaces. That's a big question, PJ.
Is there just the plant there in Salt Lake where they're building products, or is there other manufacturing facilities?
Yeah, we do. So everything happens within the walls of our location in Hoyt in Salt Lake City. We have outside vendors across the United States. We have some overseas vendors that we deal with from time to time. So it's a big task from that standpoint. All of our manufacturing with respect to the archery equipment is here in Salt Lake City at our factory.
And now, is there you're taking on this role this year in the Olympic year, I imagine, at Hoyt. That's a big year.
Yeah. I mean, the Olympics is obviously a special place in the Easton family. It's part of what they're looking for they're a legacy family in this world we call archery, and recurve archery means an immense amount to them. And so obviously it means an immense amount to me and the rest of the factory. We're pretty proud of it. We've got a lot of Hoyt bows and Hoyt limbs in the Olympics this year, including Casey, right?
So yeah, definitely.
Everybody's rooting for that team. So I think, especially within the sales, marketing and the engineering groups, I mean, we're all cautiously optimistic, maybe a little nervous as the games approach. But we've got big screens in some of the different departments. I'm sure there will be some archery streaming across those screens during those events.
What's that like for you? You're sitting there watching, whatever, whether it's a World Cup or the Olympics or whatever, and you see someone stand up there and you just see that big Hoyt logo. What's that feel? What's that like for you?
Yeah, it's pretty prideful. I mean, it's something that we talk about, those of us that are extremely passionate about the brand. And then it's like, how do we share our own passion or emotion with, the people on the floor? And, because it's easy for us, to look at that situation and just be proud and excited and all of those things. But when it's an opportunity to show the factory and the people who maybe, it's not a passion for them, it's a job. And when you show them that, it's like, you can just see the next level of like, wow, okay, this is different now. And we take advantage of those opportunities whenever we can to try to make sure that people really truly understand, like, that bow that you just put together today, it might be in the Olympics this year or in 4 years. So, So yeah, it's pretty awesome feeling when you get to see that.
That's cool.
I think it, you know, the Olympics is the absolute pinnacle, but, and like you said, the World Cup, I mean, it extends to the compound side. It extends to, you know, you see somebody shoot the animal of a lifetime in any of those situations. Anytime you see, you know, our products in those pictures or those videos, it makes you feel pretty good.
Watching Mike Schlosser shoot a perfect 150 to win some tournament somewhere.
Right? Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, all right. So let's talk about you now. Hunting, that is something that's very big for you. Tell us how hunting fits in for you. What do you like to chase most? What's on your bucket list yet?
So, I mean, bucket lists yet, probably some stags in New Zealand. I've had the opportunity to hunt moose in Alaska and caribou and the Nunavut territories. Man, I like chasing all. If I was going to pick two, it'd be antelope and elk. I really enjoy hunting the two of those animals. I'm not a great sit in the tree stand all day kind of guy. If it hits 11 o'clock and it isn't busy, I'm itching to get out of the stand. But that's probably because I grew up a Western region hunter.
Right.
I love hunting whitetail, just as much as anything else, to be quite honest with you. I have a hard time sitting in the stand through the middle part of the day.
Yeah, that gets rough. I can definitely, I've been Western hunting before, and it's like you're always doing something out there versus just sitting in the tree from dark to dark.
Whitetail is a different mental challenge, but they are a fun animal. There's no doubt. But yeah, if I'm choosing, you know, my top two, it's antelope and elk. And I actually have a couple of those hunts this year, so I'm pretty excited.
That was going to be my next question. Will you be able to get to do any of that this year?
Yeah, I got a general tag in Idaho, the early part of August. And then, I drew a really good elk tag in Wyoming this year. That'll be in September. So, and then I am going to Kansas in November. So I guess I get the trifecta this year on those three that we've been talking about.
Hunting with Evan Williams there in Kansas?
No, hunting with Randy and a group of people from Hoyt and Easton. So it's an area where it's a place that we've hunted before. This will be my third trip there. So it'll be fun.
Nice. All right. So back to Hoyt now. So you come in as president. What's on your mind? What are you looking for the future? Do you have some big ideas that you're able to share with us? What's your vision now?
Yes. You know, first of all, I mean, as Randy exits stage left, you know, he's left the plate pretty full. I mean, you know, we're in a back order, which is good for the company, and I'd like to get out of it as fast as we can for the customer. But you know, the cupboard's not bare by any stretch of the imagination. There's some pretty good momentum for the company. So thanks to him for some of the things that he's put in place there. But I think for me, it's my focus is really making sure that the team knows, you know, I really want to focus the team on collaboration, and I really want to focus the team on the fact of like, I want your ideas. I want you to bring stuff to the table. Just try to move in that direction for us. What I don't want to be is I don't want to sit up on the top of the mountain in some glass palace and tell everybody what to do. That is just not my personality. And so my ultimate goal, my ultimate strategy is to let the experts be experts, and hopefully I can move the rocks that need to be moved, and we can enjoy success together versus, you know, just being somebody that tells everybody what to do. That's not what I'm looking for at all.
Right. Yeah. Let's talk about some of the challenges this year, because they've certainly been across the industry, across the world, not just archery. I mean, everybody's feeling that pinch, especially if you need aluminum.
Yeah. So when Randy changed my title to VP of operations, it came with oversight of the supply chain department, because we were without a manager. And so I got supply chain by fire hose. So yeah, I've been right in the middle of it. Probably the biggest struggle, you know, we've got just crazy demand, coupled that with massively increased lead times, to increasing costs, to shortages across the board. I mean, you name it, whether it's resin or plastic or aluminum. I mean, it's we're battling every day, trying to make sure that we have stuff here. And we've been lucky to this point, I would say, in lucky in this unlucky environment, but we've been able to just barely stay ahead of it. But you know, not at the level. I mean, ultimately, if everything was as normal, we'd probably be in a little bit better situation from a delivery standpoint, which I know is on everybody's mind. I've seen plenty of comments in, you know, on the Hoyt owner groups where people are saying, well, maybe this new guy can figure out the delivery. Well, it's on our minds. There's no doubt. Like we want to get the bows in people's hands as fast as we can. But this year has brought some significant challenges.
And it was a good year too, with your new bows that you put out this year. I know people were really excited about them. The new Ventum with your new stabilization system there in the front. And it seemed like there was a lot of excitement, is a lot of excitement for the new bows. Yeah. Compounds.
Yeah. So that, you know, it was a big switch for us. Obviously this new system's more of a hybrid cam than the cam and a half. And so moving away from something that we'd been pretty devout to for my whole career. I mean, I got here in 03, which was the first year of cam and a half. And this is the first year our hunting bows haven't been specifically driven off of that system. So, you know, we made some big changes this year and we're extremely happy with the reception, how our customer, how the Hoyt loyalists and even those out there who are more of a pick the one that they like the best, right? I mean, the results have been fantastic. So we're excited about that. We're excited the direction that we're going with our hunting line, with all of our line. So it's been crazy though. Yeah. Having all of that big demand at the same time as we were fighting the major shortages and all of the pitfalls in the supply chain world has been really tough, but it's a challenge that I think everybody really enjoys. You know, it keeps it from being boring. That's for sure.
I was going to say, I'm sure it's better than sitting around saying, I wonder if any orders are coming in today.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I'm not looking the gift horse in the mouth. I'm plenty happy with the orders that we've been getting and really appreciative of it from everybody out there. So,
yeah. And the target side, those have been doing well too. I know I see more and more of the Invictas out there on the line.
Yeah. The target, you know, target is so, you know, there's a domestic component and then there's a pretty major international component and, you know, feeling for the international crew, cause that's been tough over there, them coming through the pandemic. And I know Lancaster is feeling that too, from that perspective. So, but yeah, lots of Invictas, still seeing some pretty strong demand there, even all things considered. And then the recurve lines are doing well as well.
For sure. Yeah. Definitely see a ton of those. So what, from your end there, like, do you see a light at the end of the tunnel for this, for the supply chain issues and all that? Like, are you able to see any of that out there yet? Or are we still kind of swimming through the river?
I think we're swimming through the river. I think everybody that says I see a light at the end of the tunnel is more hopeful than realistic. you know, the demand, and until the demand falls off from manufacturing, the supply has been hurt. There's no doubt. You know, the way that Hoyt dealt with the pandemic, the way that every other company out there has dealt with the pandemic. I mean, less people on the job every day, or shutdowns depending on where you are in the world. All of those things have hurt supply, and then, you know, when you throw demand at it like it's been across the board, it's just a bad recipe for shortages. So I guess, you know, there's such a perfect storm from you know, shipping shortages to material shortages to you know, the freeze in Texas. Like, who saw that coming, right? Like that destroyed the plastics and the epoxy resin systems world. And so I think we're in for this for another year or so. I don't know. Maybe I'm being too much of a pessimist. Maybe I should make sure my glass is half full on this, but in the realism part of my world, I'm going to be cautiously pessimistic at this point, and we're just going to keep hammering every day and trying to make sure that we can have the product, have the materials here to make the products.
Right. Well, just in reading about it, I mean, you hear that, okay, there was, you know, this slowdown. So you think, oh, well, now it's just picked back up. But it doesn't happen. They don't catch up that fast.
Right.
That hole right. that was there still has to be backfilled before you start making headway.
And so you still have reduced supply and you still have increased demand. And until that balances out, you're not, we're not in any catch-up phases yet.
Right, right.
Lead times are, have grown exponentially across the board. So not making excuses. It's realism. I mean, we're building bows every day, as many as we can build. So,
and in the archery world, or especially the compound world, you know, hunting is seen as the king. In Hoyt, how does that split work out for you folks between the target archery stuff and the hunting stuff? Obviously, you're a big player in both.
You mean as far as like how we prioritize?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, one of the things we try to do from a development standpoint is we try to make sure if there's any really big moves happening in the hunting side that we don't couple that with really big moves on the target side. That's just a resource allocation situation there. There's only so many product engineers and there's only so many manufacturing guys to really work work on those projects or new processes and whatnot. And so I wouldn't say that one is, you know, we don't look at it from a project standpoint as if, oh, well, that's target. We don't need to worry about that. I mean, obviously the lion's share and significant margin is hunting. And so we spend a lot of time on hunting every year on our premier models, even our mid-price stuff. And then when target bows come to the mat, and they're up for a redesign, we spend just as much focus and just as much effort on those products as well. And so, you know, they're equally as important to us as the hunting models are, regardless of the volume differences.
Right, right. And now across the world, how does that match up? You know, you get over to Europe. I would imagine Target is bigger there than hunting, but I actually don't know. I don't.
Yeah, I would say that it's exactly the opposite of what the U.S. is, right?
Okay.
I mean, if the U.S. is 90% hunting, then that's probably 90% Target overseas. It's a big difference in market size for sure.
Yeah, and is that.
More recurve over there as well, right? So it's not just compound. When you talk target in Europe, you're talking a major recurve side.
Yeah. Okay, so now let me ask you, they're sitting at Hoyt. So the recurve side, are you folks seeing that it from our side here, we see this like huge growth in bare bow archery. Everybody loves that. I don't know if that comes down to the manufacturer level since you guys are making bows, although I know you have the ones that have special, allow you to incorporate some bare bow specific weights to meet certain requirements. But
sure,
does that come to you or is recurve?
I mean, I know we've seen significant growth in bare bow and it, I guess where we see it, since we don't have a specific model that is a bare bow model, like you're saying, we have the integrated weight system that fits on the Exceeds. We see a pretty significant sales on those weight systems. And so that's kind of where we make our judgment of like, wow, bare bow is really growing. I would definitely agree with your sentiment, PJ, that that bare bow market has seen some significant growth. And, you know, I mean, maybe even before we got into this huge demand, this huge growth in the archery industry, I think bare bow was already getting some momentum. But man, we're seeing it everywhere. Trad, bare bow, recurve, it doesn't matter what the category is.
Yeah. Are you seeing, so like when you started there 18 years ago, I think you said,
yeah,
what do you see? How does archery look now compared to then? Like what differences do you see? What similarities? What's it like?
That's a good question. I mean, 18 years ago, I only had an engineering perspective, so I'll share that one with you. I didn't really have a big market growth and sort of that type of perspective. But 18 years ago, I mean, we were all of us, you know, us and our competitors, we were still in the speed game. It was like, how many more feet per second can we harvest every year? And I think you're seeing that's sort of gone the way of the dodo, so to speak. I mean, we've gotten up to this place where speed has kind of been reached. So now you're seeing, you know, different factors come into play from a feature standpoint. I think you see more lifestyle type focus on how advertising is done. I think you see more component level stuff, you know, whether it be our integrated sidebar mounts or, you know, integrated features like the QAD rest, those types of things. I think you're starting to see that accessories market really start to grow and shine, because that's where the differentiation comes. Because there's maybe the word to use is there's a lot of parity in the market today, because there used to just be a couple of really good bow companies, and now there's a lot. So yeah, I think that makes it, you know, you have to refocus and strategize around those types of things, and make sure that, you know, you keep your quality in play and you know what your customer is looking for.
Well, in keeping with the accessories, of course, the new Hoyts this year came out with that new Picatinny mount for the sighting system. How you feeling about that? What was your thought process behind that?
You know, it was something that had kicked around. I mean, I shoot long range rifles. You know, Randy shoots a lot of rifle stuff, and it was just like, hey, you know, we should think about trying to do something with a pick rail, and nobody's done it. We didn't really know why. And then, you know, we kicked around the idea, well, let's not just put it on the side. Why don't we put it on the front? And then we can get rid of some mass and, you know, in the windage block, and all in all, I'm really happy with it. I think we'd made some really good moves early on. We brought some accessory companies into the fold early to make sure that we were trying to have some availability into the market there. You know, even our own fuse line, like, I don't think anybody could have predicted it as popular as that's been, but it's been really, I mean, you know, our back order on sites, I know our partners, you know, from, I won't name them, because I can't name all of them off the top of my head, but I think we have 5 or 6 partners that are, you know, partners just being that they're building sites for that pick rail mount, but everybody seems to be having really strong success there. So we're really happy with how it's landed and how it's been accepted. So yeah, I think we'll see those for a while.
You can get a pretty flat bow now with, you know, the integrated rest, the integrated sight, and now I know the most recent quiver mount really sucks that quiver right against the bow. Just a real streamlined bow you can have now.
That's the whole benefit, right? Is how much of that weight can you get in line versus offset that you have to deal with on the stabilization. So when you don't have to deal with all those things, you can make the bow lighter. So, I mean, ultimately that's just one of those features, right? You know, mass, vibration, sound, speed, those are some of the measurables. And there's not a lot more than that when it comes to the consumer's ability to make a decision. And you get to cosmetics and quality and those types of things. So yeah, it's a big one. It's a big one. We're really excited about where the pick rail is going to go for us.
Cool. Well, all right. Shifting gears a little bit. When you're not at Hoyt, when you're not involved in archery, what's Zach Gertzall's doing? What are you doing?
I like power sports a lot. I'd ride snowmobiles. I have a razor. Like to go camping with the family. I'm one of those guys that always has to have a project. So when I'm not at work, I'm probably working on something at the house. I have a knack for taking on really big projects, but I think I'd go crazy if I wasn't working on something. So that's probably why I do it all the time.
Power sports, snowmobiling. So you don't have to go too far to do that in the winter, I imagine.
No, I mean, it's an hour and a half, but you know, in the winter months, you know, I've been snowmobiling for about 4 years now, and man, I just fell in love with it. It's an amazing thing to get in the backcountry, and we do a lot. We're snowmobiling in the mountains, so it offers up some pretty significant terrain, and it's amazing. You know, you know, I get to snowmobile in places where I get to hunt too, so you get to ride a snowmobile through the through those areas where normally you're killing yourself hiking in, and it just gives you a different perspective, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember coming out to the, whenever the last World Cup was there in Salt Lake at the Easton Center. Yeah. I remembered I'd never flown into Salt Lake before. And that descent, when you come over the mountain, that's pretty impressive that you just come over that thing and you kind of come straight down into that airport. Do you get used to that after a while?
Well, I don't know. I guess you, maybe you get used to it. I guess you start, maybe you take it for granted a little bit, but I tell you what, from my house, I'm on the kind of the southwest portion of the main valley, the Salt Lake Valley. And, you know, I wake up in the morning and I still marvel when I get to see the sunrise over the mountains. I mean, the Wasatch Front's a pretty special place when it comes to scenery and what there is available from an outdoor and a sporting good, or a sporting standpoint. So I still catch myself, you know, this sunset is obviously, I told you, I think it's from Montana, this background on my screen, but I'm still a sucker for a good sunrise and a good sunset.
Right. So. Now there's that, what is that? Is that Antelope Island that's out there in the Great Salt Lake?
Yep.
That place
Antelope
with the crazy mule deer that you pay like $300,000 for or something like that.
Yep.
Have you been out there?
I've never been out there. But there's all kinds of, you know, recreation out there from a standpoint of like lots of people go out there to hike. They do a shed hunt out there every year where they open the island for 2 days and you can go out there and hunt those monster sheds. And it's one of the only free roaming bison herds, I think, is out on Antelope Island. So, it's a cool place. You know, it's crazy that, the deer out there, they are what they are because of probably mostly because of the management. I mean, that wasn't hunted at all for a really long time. So
yeah. Now they shoot what, like two deer a year?
Yep.
Like that.
They give one in the draw and they sell one at the big hunt expo. So
that's
some
crazy.
Guy gets to pay $300,000 for it. And some guy gets the hunt of a lifetime for nothing.
have you ever put in for it?
Nah. In Utah as a resident, you're only allowed to put in for one trophy species. So I've been chasing elk for my whole career here and I have enough points now. This year I cashed in my points for Wyoming, but I'll be hunting Utah in the next couple of years for elk. And then we'll see where it goes from there. I do mostly just general hunts for mule deer in this state, which is no small task seeing the terrain, but the quality of animals is pretty fantastic for public land hunting.
So elk in even for you for residents is also a draw. You're not guaranteed a tag.
There are some general over the counter stuff that you can do. And there are some units where you can go do those types of hunts. But if you want a trophy hunt, a real quality hunt, you're going to wait a long time for it.
Yeah. Wow.
Even for a residence.
Awesome. Well, shifting back to target archery,
okay.
From your perspective there on the inside, what do we need to do? What do you think needs to happen to just get it a little more mainstream, more, you know, you can turn on ESPN and watch cornhole and darts and, you know, we are seeing some archery out there, but what do we need to do to get that bigger?
Well, I'd be lying to you if I told you I had the answer or that I had significantly thought about it, but I think the difference between darts and cornhole and archery is that we're living in a space where people really like stuff that's easier. I mean, archery's tough, right? I mean, it's a pretty significant investment for equipment, and then you have a significant investment of time to become good at it. And then you see what great looks like. And I think there's a relatability there. Like you look at the sports that are always broadcast from whether it's golf or, you know, basketball or football. I mean, those mainstream things that everybody takes part of, but our public or our populace that shoots archery is a little bit smaller. And I really don't know the answer to your question, BJ. I don't know how you make archery more mainstream, but that seems like that's the maybe the focus that we would need in order to hit some of those goals. I think we're doing better today. I think, you know, the footage that Cam has out there for the ASA, I think what World Archery's doing, I mean, so now it's out there, but it feels like the next step is to make mainstream know that it's out there, because I mean, man, I think people would enjoy it. But if they actually knew that it was on, it's just, you know, if it's on NBC Sports or if it's on some YouTube channel, I mean, those things are becoming more widely recognized and accepted, but I think we just got to get the message out somehow.
I know Rob Caulfield here, he always said, it's like, okay, you see Mike Schlosser up there shooting, you know, you see him drawing his bow and then you see the arrow hitting. And it's hard to translate that to somebody exactly the distance and how difficult that is. Cause yeah. I mean, he makes it look so easy, but it's like, you know, hitting this little thing the size of a dime every time.
Yeah. And I think, you know, he makes it look so easy, but you know, the other missing component of that, and there's wind meters now and they show that, but nobody can really understand how hard it is to shoot in a 15 mile an hour crosswind and you know, the, how impressive that is. And so, man, I don't know. I mean, Rob makes a good point there. There's no doubt that it's amazing what they do and how, and when you play the game and you shoot competitively, you really understand how good those guys really are.
70 meters, then that's even crazier to show what Brady Ellison is looking at and what he makes happen out of that.
Exactly.
That's just incredible.
You know, just want to say thanks to you guys for today. And then thanks to all of our customers out there for being Hoyt loyalists or Hoyt supporters. You know, we very much appreciate all of the people out there that buy our products and take our products to the woods or to the tournament circuit. So, you know, we look forward to many more years of improved technology and quality and all of those things. So
there definitely is the Hoyt loyalists. I mean, we see them at our shop all the time. These guys come in, man, they want Hoyt. They love the Hoyts. You know, that's cool to see the different teams like that, you know, teams. Yeah. That's my word.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate those guys and gals specifically, but also, you know, I love it when a customer comes into a shop, you know, whether it's Lancaster or any other shop in this country, but somebody who comes in there and really like does their homework and puts the bows against each other. So it's more about their experience than it is about the marketing. And that's my engineering side. You know, the marketing means a lot. I know I'm affected by it. I'm sure we all are as consumers, or it wouldn't be such a big thing. But yeah, I just love it when people go in and really put everybody against everybody and make the decision based on what they enjoyed shooting the most. So
Zach Kurtzall, great to meet you, and we certainly appreciate your time today.
Yeah, good to meet you, PJ. I really enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
All right, folks, that is another episode of the Competition Archery Media Podcast. You can find us on all the platforms wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Thanks for being here today.